43. So they rose up that very hour and returned to Jerusalem and found the 11 and those who were with them gathered together, saying, "The Lord is risen indeed and has appeared to Simon." And they told about the things that had happened on the road and how he was known to them in the breaking of bread. Now as they said these things, Jesus himself stood in the midst of them and said to them, "Peace to you." But they were terrified and frightened and supposed they had seen a spirit. And he said to them, "Why are you troubled, and why do doubts arise in your hearts? Behold my hands and my feet, that it is I myself. Handle me and see, for a spirit does not have flesh and bones as you see I have." When he had said this, he showed them his hands and his feet. But while they still did not believe for joy and marveled, he said to them, "Have you any food here?" So they gave him a piece of broiled fish and some honeycomb, and he took it and ate it in their presence.
It's a beautiful day, wonderful day. June 23rd now, still fresh strawberries for breakfast, and a new calf on the ground this morning, and the sun is shining, and everything is good in the world. So happy that you're here with us, and thank Brother Jim for that reading. Keep your books, your Bibles, open to that passage. It's only, 10 verses or so, but I'd like for you to follow along as we do go over that this morning. Our reading this morning, at first glance, seems to be a very straightforward narrative. But I would suggest that it is one of, if not the most profound reading that we will have ever read from this pulpit. You may say that's a little over the top, but I'll explain why. And I think that one of the main reasons why this passage is so important is because during his ministry, Jesus said that everything that we've been talking about for the last few weeks, his death, his burial, and now his resurrection, he had been talking about these all along. And if they had not happened, then Jesus could not be believed about anything else that he has said. Nothing else in the Gospels. And if there's nothing in the Gospels that we can believe, then there's nothing in the entire Bible that we can believe, because all of the Bible is focused on this time, this coming together of events. And it talks about the fact that Jesus would indeed come to this earth, that he would live as a man, he would be put to death, and then he would be resurrected from the dead, and then he would live again. So simply put, if we don't have today's passage of confirmation of the resurrection of Jesus, then it's all a fraud. Everything that the writers of the New Testament, from Matthew to the Revelation, would be a fraud. None of it would be anything that we could put our hope and our faith in. But the good news is the other side of the coin. If what takes place in today's reading actually did happen and is true, if it is true, then the words of Jesus are true. And if it is true, then the words of the Old Testament prophecies are true. And if it is true, then the words of the apostles are true. The words of the eyewitnesses are true. And it all adds up to mean that you and I indeed have the hope of living again after this life, just as Jesus lives again after his resurrection. So our question today is, was that really Jesus alive last week that was talking to those two men from Emmaus? We know that there had already been an attempt for a cover-up, guess we could call it, on the resurrection of Jesus. When the Roman soldiers realized that he was no longer in the tomb, and they went to the Jewish leaders to tell them that, don't know for sure what happened, but he's not there. The Jewish leaders said, look, you tell everybody that his disciples came and stole his body away. And when you read that account, it makes you realize that things really haven't changed that much. In over 2,000 years, the idea, I guess, is still if you tell a lie soon enough, loud enough, long enough, hopefully some people will believe it. But it didn't work in the case of Jesus and his resurrection. Verse 33, they got up that very hour and returned to Jerusalem. They, meaning the two men that from Emmaus that Jesus was eating with last week, and in the middle of that time together, disappeared. They were so excited about that, they walked the 7 miles back to Jerusalem. It's dark. It's night. I don't even like to walk out on the road at night, but with all of whatever would have gone with that, they were so excited to tell somebody, the apostles, that they had seen Jesus. They were not going to put it off till the next morning. So they head back to Jerusalem. They get there, presumably the door is locked. Bang, 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 let us in, let us in. We've got something to tell you. And they get in. And it sounds like there's a big commotion going on, lots of excitement. And these two guys are wanting to tell them that they have seen Jesus. And what's the first thing they hear when they get in? They hear somebody saying, he really has risen and Peter saw him. All right. So, what is it? 34. The Lord has really risen and has appeared to Simon. So what they were so excited to tell him about, somebody else has kind of already sort of beat him to that. But doesn't take away from their excitement. In verse 35, they begin to tell their account. They want to tell their story. Their eyewitness account reinforces the eyewitness account of Peter and earlier of Mary Magdalene. And so here we have the first of three, I'm going to call them legal standards that I want to share with you this morning as to whether something is true or not. Is this Jesus' risen experience? Is it real? Is it true? It is what we call consistent profession. It's where several eyewitnesses all profess to have seen the same thing. A multiple account of the same experience. Mary Magdalene had seen him with her own eyes. Peter, it says, has seen him with his own eyes. These two men from Emmaus are saying they've seen him. And under the Jewish law, it took a minimum of two eyewitnesses for something to be accepted or confirmed as true or not. So now we have this first level of confirmation of Jesus' resurrection, because we've got all of these eyewitness accounts. A consistent profession of what is true. Verse 36 says, "And while they were talking, he appeared in their midst." He, meaning Jesus, just miraculously is there in their midst. Presumably the door is still closed. These men, the apostles, I mean, whether they were in fear of their life or not from what has taken place, I don't know, but it's night, it's dark, and most people close their doors. So Jesus didn't come through the door without being seen. He didn't come through the window. He didn't come through the trap door in the floor. He just appeared. And there's no denying that he is there in their presence. And that gives us the second point of legal standard that I want to share with you. It's called confounding presence. It is when you find the gun, the smoking gun, at the scene of the crime. It is when they found that $200,000 of cash in the senator's freezer, the senator that forgot to tell him about his rental property incomes. It's the feathers that were in the dog's mouth that looked like my chicken feathers. It's what we call confounding presence. It's the presence now of Jesus, who only a few days ago they saw him hanging on the cross. They saw the life go out of him. They knew he had been buried. And yet now he stands in the middle of their presence. It is the presence of Jesus. And he's standing there in the midst and he says, "Peace be to you. It's okay. It's me." Verse 37 says, "They were startled and frightened and thought they had seen a spirit." Verse 38, he tries to calm them down. He says, "Why are you so troubled? And why is there still doubt in your hearts? I'm here. I'm here in your presence." Verse 39 and 40, he says, "See my hands and see my feet. It is I, myself. Touch me and see." So now we have the third legal standard. It is what is called convincing proof. Why do you still doubt? Look at the evidence. Look at my hands. Look at my feet. See the holes. See the nail holes. There's apparently only one of the Gospels that actually says that he was nailed to the cross. Here the implication is that he's got nail holes in his hands and his feet. I had a plug taken out of this finger almost a month ago. It was a sizable hole, and it's just now really getting all nice. And this was just a few days prior. He's still got holes in his hands from being nailed to the cross and to his feet. He says, "Look at my hands. Look at my feet. Use your eyes. Use your fingers. I stand before you not as a spirit, but in the flesh." Verse 41 says, they still could not believe it. And perhaps now not so much because of skepticism, but because it says of joy. Pinch me. Pinch me. Is this real? It is so good, I can't believe it. We've experienced times like that. This is so good, I just can't believe it's true. And that's where they were, I think, approaching at this point. Somebody pinch me. This can't be happening. It's too good. And Jesus says, okay, I'll show you. You got something to eat? Verse 42, 43, he takes the broiled fish and he eats it. More convincing proof. Spirits don't eat food, I guess. And then he says, I'm sorry. That's as far as we can go today. That's the end of my verses. Oh, come on, boy. There's only 10 more verses and the whole book of Luke is over. We've spent a year reading. Come on, go ahead and do it. I'm sorry. That's next week. If you don't normally read ahead, try it. Or you'll just have to come back next week to see how it all ends. What should we remember from today's reading? I would suggest a couple of things. If you ever doubt the resurrection of Jesus, reread this and the other accounts of the Gospels. And look very close at those three things. Consistent profession. So many people giving the same eyewitness account over and over and over and over. Confounding presence. Jesus stood in the midst of many and left no doubt that his presence was very real. And the third thing, convincing proof. By using the same kind of test that you and I use every day to prove something to ourselves, those early eyewitnesses were convinced that Jesus had risen and was once again alive. If you do this, you will be reassured that indeed Jesus did really rise from the dead to live again today and forevermore. And the second thing that I thought about as I was finishing this up, why doesn't Islam, and perhaps others, just go out and prove that he never lived again? Why go through the whole big jihad thing and kill thousands or tens or hundreds of thousands of people to get you to believe? I mean, because all you have to do is disprove that Jesus ever rose from the dead and all of Christianity falls apart. Like the house of cards, I think. It just tumbles and falls apart. And there's no reason for anybody to believe any of it if he didn't do what we read about today. Reread this account, all of the apostles, or the gospel accounts of this, and I think I'm convinced that you'll go away believing that Jesus is alive and that you and I have that same hope that we will live again after this life, as Jesus is doing so today.